there's a point where you really have to keep your ego in check. You know, you start to think that you can do anything. Well, you can't do everything. So that was one that was very capital intensive at that point in time for me. And I had to make the decision that this wasn't going to work. And it's not easy to do that because your mindset is to make everything work.
Of course, yeah.
Right.
Don't give up.
The problem is it takes too much of your time, too much of your management's time, other people's time, with no return.
Hi, I'm Luke Hanson McDonald, and welcome to Beyond the Family Business.
Hi, Luke Hanson McDonald here. Welcome back to Beyond the Family Business. Today we have something very special. We had a chance to sit down with one of Eastern Canada's best known entrepreneurs, Rob Steele. He's a Newfoundlander, second generation of a prolific family of entrepreneurs. His father, Harry Steele, is a legend. He's a huge philanthropist around here as well. He's built one of the largest auto dealer roll-ups in Canada. He's recently expanded into Texas, which we get into. He's recently launched a whiskey brand with Kiefer Sutherland. He's friends with the Rolling Stones. He is one of the most interesting people in the world. And Rob was kind enough to sit down with us and tell us about his story, some of the bumps and bruises he had starting his business, as well where he thinks he's going next, and his view on the EV market and what that will look like in the auto sector. You're gonna find this one super interesting. Enjoy.
Well, you know what? Why don't we, to break the ice, why don't I ask you a couple sort of more personal questions of what's your favorite music or your favorite band?
Favorite band, right? There's no doubt the Rolling Stones.
And you've seen them live before.
I have, yeah.
When was the first time you saw them live?
1981, Rich Stadium, Buffalo, New York.
So, as a little thank you for you coming along here, I was able to track down a guy who attended that concert, and he has a t-shirt.
Oh my God.
From Rolling Stones show.
Yes, I actually had this t-shirt, this same t-shirt.
And he actually—
That's amazing. Wow, that really means a lot.
And he actually has
a ticket
from the concert.
That's right. That's, geez, how did you, wow. That was fantastic.
No, absolutely.
I'm amazed at that.
I love the Stones too. I grew up with them. My dad was always obsessed with them.
Yeah.
And I was lucky enough, I got to see them play in Toronto back in the late 90s. And yeah.
Well, the interesting thing is I was 19 at that point in time when I saw them. And, you know, living in Newfoundland, I was going to Memorial University. And this was obviously predates internet and, you know, the access that people have to content now.
Sure.
So it was rare to get the opportunity. And there wasn't as much mobility in those days.
Yeah.
So the concert, they were playing in Buffalo, New York, and there was a company that was offering bus rides to Buffalo.
Yeah.
Now, we were in St. John's, Newfoundland, right? So we flew to Toronto and took the bus from Toronto to Buffalo.
Yeah.
And it was literally like a yellow school bus.
Yeah.
And took forever. And the lineups were, but we didn't care.
Exactly. Right? You're 19, you're just happy to be there. How was it?
It was a great show. There was about 80,000 people there.
All right. Ice broken. Why don't we start off with who are you and what do you do?
My name is Rob Steele. I'm CEO of Steele Auto Group and owner of Steele Auto Group. We have 55 dealerships here in Canada, all Atlantic Canada, and 9 dealerships currently in Texas.
Okay.
We have a number of body shops. We have 3 power centers that, you know, sell ATVs.
Sure.
You know, so
how do you get into that business?
Which one, the car?
The car, yeah, car.
I got into business when I was late 20s, about 28. And previous to that, I had the Auto Trader franchise for Newfoundland.
Oh, wow.
And I had sold that. And when I had sold that, I didn't know really what I was going to do, but I happened to know car dealers, but, you know, with the Auto Trader. And there was a particular car dealer in Halifax, Tom Collins, who owned Collins Chrysler. And he wanted to sell. So myself and 2 other people partnered, 3 of us, and we bought Tom out, not knowing anything about the car business at all. Yeah. Totally great.
You know? Yeah, yeah. And then how did it start to scale? Because I think you mentioned to me.
Yeah, you know, it's this interesting thing about scale. The concept of scaling wasn't even on my radar at that point in time. You know, when you're a young person, you're not thinking about scaling or, you know, how are you going to grow your business. I just wanted to kind of do things that I like doing.
Yeah.
I want to be kind of in an environment that I like being in.
Yeah, so yeah.
I like the automotive environment.
Yeah.
I didn't have any grand vision of being a consolidator in the car business.
Sure.
But I kind of took off from there. I mean, the first couple of years were really, really tough. One, I had two partners, and anybody that's been in business, partnerships can be tough.
Yeah, right? Definitely.
And, none of us were really understood the car business, so we struggled with so it was a learning curve on that.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, I ended up buying my partners out.
Mm-hmm.
And after the third year, we started to get some traction, mm-hmm. and some money in the business.
Mm-hmm.
And after a couple of years of that, just out of sheer boredom, I wanted to another challenge.
Sure.
And I bought another dealership. And it sort of went from there.
And so when you bought another dealership, was the idea that you were going to be able to find some, you know, synergies between it or some efficiencies, or was it really just, something else to do?
I didn't have a vision of scaling up dealerships. I didn't think I was going to go, a second dealership, then eventually I bought a third, mm-hmm. and so on. But it just kind of happened. And as I got going, I built this platform.
Mm-hmm.
I recognized that there was an opportunity to mm-hmm. scale.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, in those days, it was very different because the OEMs, yeah. original equipment manufacturers,
yes.
the term, OEMs, Ford, Chrysler, GM, all those, they did not encourage cross-ownership of brands.
Why was that?
Because the philosophy from the OEM perspective then was that that somebody that was representing their brand, if you were the dealer, a Ford dealer, for example, that you were better off, that you would be loyal to the brand.
Sorry, my dad's just there behind us.
How are you?
Making faces at me. Apologies.
Yeah, that you would be loyal to the brand, right?
Yep.
And that representing another brand, you couldn't be as right. loyal to ours.
Yeah, yeah. It right? lose focus.
And so the networks and the dealer model was, from the OEM perspective, was to have individual ownership.
Right.
Right. Not a network.
So how did you convince them to let you do it?
I won't say subterfuge, but it was a little bit of sort of turning your head the other way. My second dealership was actually a Hyundai dealership. Mm-hmm. And Hyundai, back in the early 90s, was a fledgling brand.
Yeah, for sure.
Fledgling. And I think the fact that it was fledgling and not well established, I think Chrysler at that point in time, which was my first dealership, kind of turned the other way, turned their head the other way. Just said, but of course nowadays they encourage OEMs, they want to have professional management. They
of
want
course.
Professional players.
Because you get consistency.
Consistency, yeah. Capital to invest in image sure. upgrades, all those things.
Right.
That's very difficult for an independent.
Right. So you've recently expanded into Texas.
Mm-hmm.
That was in the 2010s that you did that?
2020.
Okay, so very recently.
Yeah.
During COVID.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Well, it was at the deal, when we actually struck a deal, Benny Boyd had two Dodge Chrysler dealerships, one in Gonzales, Texas, and one in Lockhart, Texas.
Okay.
And I did a deal with Benny. Would have been about March of 2020,
mm-hmm.
early March. And if you remember, mid-March 2020
mm-hmm.
was when everything, the whole COVID thing just
of course.
Blew up. Right?
Yeah. What was that like, putting that deal together in the middle of COVID?
That was tough. He was a great guy to deal with.
For sure.
Yeah. We ended up doing, the negotiation wasn't much of a negotiation. He was very easy to deal with. His price was reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out he's somebody that's done a lot of deals. So he knew how to have
right.
this experience.
He was comfortable with him. Why Texas?
Well, we actually had to close that deal remotely because we couldn't travel.
Right.
Right.
Yes, you have to do everything over Zoom.
That was really, really tough. Yeah.
Why do you go to Texas? Why
Texas is very. I've been drawn because I like music and art and that kind of thing. Austin, Texas. I've been going since the late 1990s.
Oh wow!
And I've always loved it down there. I bought a home there in 2006. And I just really like the vibe of Texas. And Texas is a very business friendly state.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's nowhere's perfect. Everywhere, there's pros and cons wherever you go. The weather is nice there.
Mm-hmm.
The tax environment, business environment, regulatory environment are favorable towards business. So
yeah,
and there's a lot of people.
Yeah,
you're talking over 30 million people in the state of Texas.
Right. So you got Canada and a much smaller land mass.
Yeah, exactly. And so.
Is it different as far as the OEM relationships go, or is it?
It is.
Yeah.
It is different. It's a great question. It's, I find in the US they're very much more involved in your business.
Right.
Than they are in Canada.
Right. They're a lot more involved.
Really?
More
involved, yeah. There's more.
Oversight, or
I think they're very competitive down there, and I think they you have to hit your sales targets, you have to perform, you have to
right.
do your customer satisfaction indexes, all those things.
Right. Yeah. But you've also been brand agnostic down there as well. You're not just with a single OEM.
No. Currently in Texas, we have Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram. We've got Hyundai, General Motors, Buick. GMC, what else? BMW, just bought the BMW dealership in Waco, Texas.
Yes, saw that.
And I think that's it. Yeah.
And have you had to set up a separate team for that operation down there?
I have. It's been a hybrid. I have some senior team members here that oversee the interface with the team in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
But we have an HR person in Texas now. We have a general sales manager. So we're building up a mid team in
right.
Texas. So right now we have 9 dealerships there. It'll sort of be it'll be kind of a mirror of what I've done in Canada is my idea.
Sure.
And I'm not just focused on just Texas.
Okay.
There are other states as well.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
Just building on that, not to ask too many questions, but the automotive sector, mm-hmm. there's been lots of changes with EV, et cetera. Tesla obviously has changed how they do retail in some cases, buying online. Do you think that there's any major revolution going on in that sector anytime soon, or is it?
There is. There's so much happening in the automotive world right now with this transition to EV.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge right now that I see with EV, and it's only about 3% of the market in Atlanta, Canada.
Mm-hmm.
That's like 5-6% in Canada. Mm-hmm. Total Atlanta, Canada is actually less. You know, there's range issues. There's not enough range.
Sure.
Right? And the cost, the acquisition cost of it,
yeah.
You know, it's expensive. And there's no infrastructure.
Yeah.
So at this point in time, an EV is really good for Intel as
right.
a second vehicle, not as a primary vehicle.
Yeah.
What we're seeing, and this could change, but what we're seeing is it's really being pushed by government
right.
more than the consumer demanding.
Right.
And so there's some political aspects to EV as well.
Sure.
But, once the infrastructure is built out, the costs come down, range extends,
mm-hmm.
You will see market share grow.
Right.
But the EVs themselves they have this image of, being green, much greener than ICE vehicles.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the only green thing about an EV is the emissions.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at the manufacturing of the
batteries.
The batteries of the cars.
Yeah.
The carbon footprint is pretty extensive.
Right.
That being said, and then we have to supply the electricity for them.
Yeah.
As part of the world, it's all coal-fired.
Yeah.
So it's very early stages for EV. And I don't know, I'll probably be out of the business by the time it's
full
if it becomes a majority.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. Is it fair to say you don't think it's going to be like the smartphone where nobody had them and then suddenly everybody had one?
Concept. I thought the same thing because your uncle, of course, was very successful with the telephone. And I think it's different. I think it's hard to draw that analogy because, phones were, nobody had phones other than in their house.
Yeah.
Cars are, ICE vehicles are internal combustion engine, ICE.
Yep.
Are fuel efficient, as you know, and their emissions are very low now.
Sure.
Right. Exxon's talking about coming up with fuel with zero emissions.
Really?
So, who knows where this is going? And so it's really all about, it's about the emissions are the thing.
Yeah.
I mean, and carbon footprint.
Yeah.
Climate. That's really the thing. And EV is I'm going to say, likely the future. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a far way out. I think it's a long way off.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, very interesting. If it's good with you, why don't we segue into Daewoo?
Well, so yeah, there was a brand called Daewoo that came to Canada, and I can't remember the year now. I'm going to say it was late 19, actually it might have been in the 2000s. Anyway, at that point in time, I was rolling pretty good. I had the dealerships going and running the broadcast side, and always looking to grow and for a challenge. They were looking to set up a dealer network here, and there was quite a competitive process to get that franchise. I was successful in getting the franchise.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, it never really took root in Canada for whatever reason. They had pretty good product. But the problem, when I looked at the investment I made in that, which was significant, building the dealership and whatnot, there was a point where you really have to keep your ego in check.
Mm-hmm.
And you start to think that you can do anything.
Yeah.
Right? Well, you can't do everything.
Yeah.
And so that was one that was very capital intensive at that point in time for me. And I had to make the decision that this wasn't going to work.
Right.
I shut it down.
Right.
And it's not easy to do that because your mindset is to make everything work.
Of course, yeah.
Right.
Don't give up.
The problem is it takes too much of your time,
right.
Too much of your management's time, other people's time.
Right.
With no return.
Yeah.
And is that effort and energy being redirected
right.
to what is to working?
Better returning areas.
I had to check my ego and make the right decision and shut it down.
Wow.
Yeah. And I did the same thing with the Mitsubishi in the early days. Same process. That Daewoo became Mitsubishi dealership, and then we struggled with that as well in the early days. I'm happy to say we have Mitsubishi today, and it's flourishing.
Awesome.
It's great.
That's excellent to hear. Going through a change like that, having to make the decision to shut down the Daewoo dealership, what was that like for, not to ask too personal, but what was that like for you personally? Did it make you doubt yourself at all, or did you just keep your head down and just grind through it, until you saw the light?
Yeah, I have a different attitude on that now. At the time, I was probably a little bit, I thought it would be more obvious to people. It wasn't, nobody really cares.
Yeah.
You come to realize that, you can't make everything successful.
Sure.
And you only have so much time, so much energy.
Yeah.
Where are you going to place that? Where are you going to direct?
Right.
And, if it's towards something that you're not getting any return,
mm-hmm.
and for the foreseeable future, you're probably not going to get any return.
Right.
You're better off just to
do something else.
Do something else. Yeah.
Is that something you do, annual review of now, where you think about where your time
all
is being spent?
All the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Time management is critical.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
And saying no, get to a, saying yes or no has consequences.
Yeah.
Right? So you really, it's hard to say no sometimes, but you're better off saying no and fast.
Right.
As opposed to silence and not saying anything.
Because
that implies a maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you waste more time and all kinds of things. Now that's really good advice as well. How do you remove the emotion from your decision making? You know,
it's tough. It's because it's emotions, it's a real thing. It's a real thing you have to deal with. But it also can impair your judgment.
Yeah.
Right. So I don't know how to articulate how you do that other than you try to think of what's the outcome of this decision versus going this other direction. Mm-hmm. I mean, this decision, what's the outcome? But like this decision, what's the outcome? And these are just judgment calls.
Mm-hmm.
And it really comes down to trying to make the best judgment.
Do you find that, time alone is what's needed? You know, go for a run or meditate, or is it something you actually prefer to do in a brainstorm to get other opinions on it, to help you get to that objective decision making?
It's great, 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 great segue there. All those things, right? It really is.
Yeah.
Yeah. My own, I like to bounce things off of the team, off of people. I like to take in as much perspectives as I can,
mm-hmm.
and sort of mash them all together and try to process it all and come up with what I think is the best, best call.
Yeah.
But see, it's important to do all that stuff, to take time alone, whatever that is, wherever you can get in that Zen kind of state.
Sure.
Whether it's meditation or running.
Go to a Stones concert.
Go to a concert, probably not the place to do that.
Yeah. And then last thing, you just launched a whiskey brand.
Yeah, that's right.
And I guess, do you want to talk about that quickly at all?
Well, myself and three other partners, we launched a whiskey. They're in, actually, we're different, but we're rolling right across Canada.
Awesome.
And into Europe and America in the fall. It's called Red Bank Whiskey.
Okay.
And it's celebrity endorsed. One of our partners, Kiefer Sutherland.
Awesome.
He's a partner, an equity partner in the project.
Sure.
And, I'm not a whiskey drinker. I don't know anything about whiskey.
Yeah.
But we concocted this particular whiskey with gentleman that's a professional in that area.
Sure.
And taste tested it various ones, and we settled on this.
Right.
And even though I'm not a whiskey drinker, obviously I've tried this and it's good.
Yeah. What, and where is it made?
It's right now it's made in Ontario.
Okay. Awesome.
And yeah.
That's great. Can't wait to try it.
Yeah.
All right, sir. Thank you very much for your time.
I'm Luke Hanson McDonald. This was Beyond the Family Business. Please review and subscribe. Thank you very much. Talk to you next time.